Welcome to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, CEO of Gift Planning Development, and I am very excited to have my colleague, Jay Angeletti, the president of the Angeletti Group. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Jay has been in the business a long time. How many years now, Jay?
Well, 35, 36 years, and 12 of those as a consultant after approximately 25 on the other side of the desk as a development officer.
And a lot of your work was and continues to be in the healthcare space?
15 of my years as a development officer was in healthcare, and the other 10 or so in independent and higher education. And the tail end of that time was at New York Presbyterian Hospital, which was a really wonderful and exciting place to be and time, in that it was at the very beginning of the consolidation, which is now running rampant in that industry.
And how that sets up a question I wanted to ask you, as far as how is, we know that health, well, each sector seems a fundraiser, each nonprofit sector from a fundraising standpoint seems to have unique challenges or conditions, as I call them, and healthcare certainly presents its opportunities, shall we put it in a positive way. How has, in all these years, how have you seen the changing fundraising within healthcare?
Good question. The interesting thing for me, Joe, is that when I was raising money in healthcare in the mid-90s, there was a lot of fat in the healthcare system with specific regard to reimbursement. So when major hospitals were doing campaigns at the time, needed to raise money, as an example, for a children's hospital that I was working on at Yale New Haven, the fact is fundraising wasn't that important because they could just increase their rates and generate the revenues to build the building. And we did, out of a $150 million building, raised maybe 10, but it wasn't critical to building the building. And I, at that time, said, I will never raise money for healthcare again. I will focus on education. Fast forward from the 20 plus years, 25 years, let's call it, and it's a whole different story. Reimbursement is incredibly tight in healthcare. The margins are razor thin, and so only the hospitals and health systems that can raise money, philanthropic money, are going to be the ones that can invest in their facilities and purchasing new equipment and recruiting and retaining the best people. So it's come full circle, and philanthropy is incredibly important, and I am spending a good amount of my time in that space and feeling really good about it because the dollars are making a big difference.
And the age-old question, which I'm sure has not changed in all those years, from a donor intent, is we know that it's not like you're a college or a private school, independent school, as you have mentioned, where I'm an alum, I spent my formative years there, I have a lot of emotional connection to that. That's never going to change. I'm always going to be an alum, versus I was a patient, I had a great experience, great doctors and nurses were amazing. I love the place, but you know, it's been 5 years and we move on and there's other charities. Certainly from a plan, I always have my plan giving lens on, where we're primarily focused, of course, on long-term supporters. What's your experience as far as keeping these donors? The gift officers always seem to be in acquisition mode. Annual fund people, the major gift officers are always looking for the next prospect. How do you keep them coming back and keep them connected?
Right. My experience, and I'd be interested in hearing yours, is that trend about kind of the stickiness of donors or lack thereof is in fact happening across all sectors, even education when you're an alum, where people a generation or two ago, just as you said, you're an alum, for better or worse, it's your place, and you're going to stick with them forever. And in education, that's still certainly more the case than in some other areas. But we see all of the time, with the increasing sophistication of the nonprofit sector and people being drawn to making an impact, that people will take on different organizations and projects for a period of years, and then they move on to the next one. So I think that's even affected education. However, to your point, healthcare is, you say, the bad news, good news, right? The bad news is that you are correct, that people get introduced to the system, usually through a patient or family experience. It's very intense in many cases, but then 5 years later, they may have moved on, or even fulfilling that if they're still committed to a specific disease, is an example, they may be accomplishing their work in that area by funding something through the American Cancer Society or another organization versus the same hospital. So that's a reality and a challenge. That's the bad news. The good news is that hospitals have, you know, just a continuing supply of people being introduced to the system every day. And again, and while with a college or university or school, that relationship usually the intensity grows over time. Oftentimes in a hospital setting, it gets intense right away because of the healthcare episode or experience. And sometimes that means that a major gift can be cooked a lot faster than is the case with an educational experience. What's your take? I mean, have you seen that? And what about my comment about people even moving on from project to project? And have you seen more of that over time?
Definitely in healthcare. It definitely seems by nature to be more transactional, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, with my plan giving lens, it is challenging. It seemed I have done, currently doing some interim director of plan giving work with hospitals. And certainly a lot of the plan giving prospects tend to be that World War II generation or later baby boomers. And not sure where the next generation, the younger baby boomers, where that's going to pan out. And one of the things that we talk about all the time is breaking down the silos. It's like an overused phrase at this point. Can't go to a fundraising seminar without having somebody say, break down the silos and integrate plan giving within every aspect that, I don't know who, somebody in our industry said, they're not annual fund donors, they're not major gift donors, they're not plan giving donors, they're just donors, period. And we need to treat them that way in a holistic way and offer all these different types of options to donors, and don't be so quick to run to get that cash gift. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Well, it brings up a couple other points. And I'll give you another bad news, good news. The bad news is that hospitals, or I guess this is just a fact, and that is that they're so capital intensive. So while universities and colleges have been very good at educating donors about the progression of giving up to and including a legacy deferred gift, and have been focused on raising endowment. And so, again, plan gifts are often perfect vehicles to create endowments. Hospitals being so capital intensive and so focused on dollars today that it's been difficult to emphasize planned giving. It's been difficult to get the attention of CEOs on planned giving. And if you mention planned giving and endowment, it's even worse, because if you're talking about $1 million gift, their interest is, let me have $1 million and spend it tomorrow, versus let me have $1 million commitment that's going to be realized in 10 years, and for which even then I'm only going to be able to spend 4 or 5% a year. So they have not had an interest in that. However, is I think you're very focused on, because I've heard you talk about this before, planned gifts don't need to be an either or cannibalize outright giving. They can be additive. And so if you can convince people internally about the additive nature, you may get some funding for a facility or a program today, and the planned gift might endow it or maybe not even endow it, but be able to fund it for a longer period of time. And so that's a real positive. And then the other piece about planned giving and planned giving officers, I think plan giving can be a good vehicle to take that transactional, always in acquisition mode type program to more of a relationship oriented, longer term relationship that is important. And that's why I always, as a development officer, became very close with my planned giving officer or officers with whom I worked, and brought them along on visits. Not necessarily the first visit, sometimes, but certainly in cases where I'd had success with the transactional gift, the first gift. Family comes to the hospital, has an experience, grateful to the hospital or to Dr. X, makes a gift, and then afterward, as part of stewardship even, I would come on a reporting call and say, hey, I'm coming or I'm traveling this week with my colleague and who happened to be the planned giving officer, because then in a non-fundraising way, in reporting on the gift, it always would come up in conversation. And if you were that person, Joe, oh, Joe, and tell me about your role. And then you would speak about that, and that opened up a dialogue that might lead to a gift conversation either then or some months, year down the road. And we were off and running in a different way, and it was building on the relationship. So it was not an either or, but as I say, additive, and you know, both in terms of dollars and just in terms of strengthening the relationship.
Now, you would do it that quickly in the relationship if it could be within the first year of giving that you would.
No question about it.
Really?
Yeah. But I want to emphasize again, the original visit typically wasn't a planned gift pitch. It
right.
was just that, hey, I'm working and traveling with another colleague, and depending on the in my rationale for that, either would be that we're working together. In some cases, if we were traveling, if it was an institution where we were, let's say for a hospital, traveling in Florida, you know, that would be just that we were traveling together. In other cases, it might be that he or she had something substantive to add to the conversation because he or she knew about a specific service line or doctor. But in any event, it was there, and it just opened up the dialogue to, oh, there are these other options, and I understand, and maybe I'd like, and then you had the prospect either then or later often saying, hey, tell me more about that. Tell me more about those annuities as an example. And so I found it very effective to strengthen the relationship and get people's attention around different gift vehicles, which seems simple, but is often, I think, difficult if you're trying to kind of do it through a didactic or nature or you know, sending information, which is not a bad thing to do. But I frankly found this to be the most effective way to get the attention of good donors and prospects with respect to planned giving.
Well, it's certainly the hybrid approach, right? Why wait 5-10 years down the road to start presenting this bundled approach? Why not do it from the very beginning?
Right. As you know better than most, it doesn't, you know, planned gifts often, and annuities pretty simple, right. As is a bequest, frankly, but still for getting somebody's head around a bequest, I think an annuity is simpler because in some ways an investment vehicle, right? Or mimics one. Whereas a bequest, even though it can be fairly simple, it means getting your head around your mortality. It means oftentimes spending time with your attorney. And these things just take time emotionally and in other ways. And so I believe getting the topic out there early is good so that when somebody's ready to do it, you're top of mind.
Great. Planting the seed.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly it.
So if we have major gift officers that listen to our podcast, if they're sitting listening to this and saying, yeah, Jay, you're right, I get it, but, you know, I'm never going to get the board. And there, it's a culture. One of my favorite new quotes from, it's attributed to Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And as consultants, you know, we can go in and spent a lot of time with clients, shown them the strategy, but if the culture is not there, or if we're not able to change the culture, I haven't been able to figure it out yet. They're just going to fall on deaf ears.
Yes. So number one, I'm a big fan of that quote in Believe It, and it's a part of our employment letters when someone comes to work for our firm. Right in our employment letter. So we believe in that very much. I think, and again, going back to the issue of the CEO wanting money immediately at hospitals. So I do think it often is, there's a culture problem or hurdle. However, I think a couple things are happening. Number one is, as I said before, development is becoming more important in hospitals than it has been. So foundations and development offices are getting the attention of the CEO more than they did a short while ago. And then two, hospitals, and I keep using the term hospitals, but more and more, it's really about a health system or health network. And I emphasize health because that's where hospitals, medical centers, health systems are going. In fact, most of them now, most hospitals have more than half of their revenues coming from outpatient activity. So it's not about the big box on the campus, the major medical center anymore. It's about people in programs in the communities, pushing medicine into the communities, and about wellness, about nutrition, about exercise, and so in turn, that means that philanthropy is less about naming another patient room or a nursing station and more about funding positions, funding people in programs in the field. And with respect to plant giving, again, that doesn't mean that these health systems don't need money today, but it does mean that we know probably, even though there are great strides being made, that, you know, unfortunately, cancer is going to be around. We may treat it as a chronic disease, but people are going to have cancer. People are going to have heart disease. People are going to have diabetes. So funding for the longer term, endowments or not, but the specifics about what it is that it's funding may be different, but people can make commitments, leave money in a variety of planned deferred gift vehicles to support those diseases and issues that are important to them. So I think the way medicine is moving is in a way that is more consistent and supportive of the idea of raising planned gifts. So I think going forward, if we're doing the right things, we will have an easier time creating a culture of philanthropy, number one, and number two, that includes planned giving is a very important piece in the future of healthcare in our country.
I feel like I start playing the national anthem here. That was beautiful.
We'll see if I'm right, but there's no question the trends are headed in that way. And so I think, Joe, it's incumbent upon you and me and our colleagues to, even when there's initial pushback, to acknowledge what CEOs and other administrative board leadership know is true, that capital intensive nature is, you know, remains at some level, but that we can add this new, I shouldn't say it's new, but it, you know, this area as an area of increased value to the development program.
Yeah, they don't have a choice, right? I mean, it's change or go the wayside. One of my other favorite quotes is, in the future, there'll be two types of charities, those with an endowment and those that are extinct.
Yes. Well, I mean, I was, in fact, with a college president, a client who was down here in Naples all weekend doing work, and he and I spent lunch, and actually we attended his college alumni event last evening and then spent time with him after. And we were talking about independent, small liberal arts education in this country and how that concept of putting 15 young people in a classroom with a full professor is a wonderful, uniquely American venture. And yet it's in jeopardy outside of the top 25, 50 that have wonderfully strong endowments. That, you know, he was talking about these schools that have endowments of $25 million and less, and that they're, that these small liberal arts institutions, just no way that they'll be, many of them will be around in 10, in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so to your point, build an endowment or perish.
This is great stuff, Jay. You, although I had very high expectations, you even exceeded the very high expectations.
Well, you choose a good topic, and you're a great host and speaker, and I love your YouTube videos, among other things. And so, listen, this has been a real treat for me. I hope it's of some value to those who listen to it. And Joe, I'll look forward to talking, obviously, with you more, but hopefully teaming up to do more things like this going forward.
Well, before you leave, always like to do a quick plug for my guests. So what problems do you, your company, your colleagues, what problems do you guys solve for fundraisers? This is the part where you can shamelessly promote your business.
Sure. We get hired and love to do the following. We love to assess programs. So that happens often when there's transition of leadership and an organization wants to know, and this is ripe in healthcare right now because of the need to raise more money, what is our potential and how should we be organized to realize that potential? So we love to assess programs and be involved in that work. We also have a search division that often follows those assessments because in many cases there's a realignment of staff or appointment of new staff. And so our search division gets hired. And then to be involved in fundraising campaigns. And that can either be actually managing a campaign for Soup to Nuts or running programs within campaigns, physician engagement programs designed to get physicians more involved in the development process. Major gift training, working with major gift officers either one at a time or in groups or both so that they become the best major gift officers that they can be. And so I would say those assessments, searches, and working in campaigns are what we get hired to do the most and enjoy and think we bring value.
And I know you're all over the, you'll work with people all over the country. So are you doing any global work at this point, international?
You know, we're not. And it's interesting. We haven't emphasized that, and that doesn't mean it's not a growing need, but we've had our hands full in the Northeast and then growing more recently in the Southeast and Midwest. And so for the time being, we'll leave that other important work to other fantastic people. And we're going to stick to our knitting and in the regions where we're already have some traction and boots on the ground so where we can be helpful.
Yeah. And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, our website, www.theangelettigroup.com, and or our main office is in New Vernon, New Jersey, which is 973-540-1400.
And for the audience, how do you spell Angeletti?
Right. Angel Etti.
I'm Italian. I have to know that or I would be disbarred from the Italian American Association.
Yeah. Little Angel. That's what it...
Little Angel.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for adding value to our programming. It's been a true pleasure and incredibly helpful.
Thank you so much for including us.
My pleasure.